As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
And now, Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
I'm the Mighty Manfred with you in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, and this is part two of a very special Coolest Conversations podcast with King Khan, presented by Hard Rock. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. In part two, we talk about the animated short he made with his daughter Sabalu called Retribution Now, that includes his relationship with the artist Joe Coleman. We discuss his tarot card readings that he does via the Rock and Roll Broadcasting Service. We also hear about a couple of his current music projects, including his jazz album, The Infinite Ones, and his punk band King Khan Unlimited, plus a whole lot more. But before we return to speaking with Canadian musician, songwriter, producer, writer, and activist, let's set the stage with some of the track off of his Murder Burgers album. Here's It's Just Begun, followed by part two of our Coolest Conversations podcast with King Khan, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stephen's Underground Garage.
In my mind, you just left without a trace. Some people call it a fall from grace. In hopes that you won't find another place, I curse your name for heaven's sake. Some years I tried to get the message through to you, and you can't understand that I've been true to you. Didn't mean to make you red just 'cause I'm blue for you. All I do for you, I ain't got a clue.
Mighty Manfred here with you, and I'm joined by His Royal Highness King Khan. You describe yourself as a ball of energy. It's not that you've just had extra time on your hands because of, you know, you've had tours and playing out canceled, so you've
right.
invested a lot in of this the Global Solidarity Forever organization,
oh, yes.
making connections yes. with Malik Rahim, doing a lot of good work here, but you're also continuing, you know, other art projects. You did this animated short with your daughter, one of your two daughters, Sabalu. This
yes.
Retribution Now.
Yes.
Tell me some about working with your daughter. What prompted making this short? What was the impetus to do the project?
So basically, I've had this like very strange relationship with my father. You know, he was a drug addict when I was a kid, very abusive. My whole life, it was kind of like he would come in and out here and there, you know, and there'll be moments like for 5 years, I won't talk to him. And then he's suddenly, I feel like I should reach out to him or something. Anyway, so he told me this story about the area where he grew up in northern India. And he told me about the existence of a caste of people that are even under the untouchable, right? And so this caste is called the Musahar, which literally translates to rat eater. He told me that the goddess Kali comes from these people, that like it was from a rape of a child and the child returning and killing all of the rapists and severing their heads and chopping their arms and legs off and then adorning her body with it and walking in, and then she walks into the village, you know. So it was a very powerful story, he told me, and so I made a fictional version of it, and I dedicated it to Joe Coleman, the only rat eater that I've ever loved. And I remember when I was 18, I remember seeing that film that where he is biting the heads off of mice and spitting them into the audience, you know. And in a lot of ways, this story sounds like a Joe Coleman painting, you know, like about a Kali coming from this, you know, this poor, innocent 8-year-old child who's been like gang raped by like, you know, these mean old men. So when I actually shared this story with Joe, Joe actually painted it onto a portrait that he made of me. So I then had the idea of making an animated piece out of this thing. And my daughter, Sabalu, she's absolutely an incredible painter and visual artist, also a great musician and stuff. But she's been focusing a lot on her paintings and stuff. So what I did was that I told her what I wanted to do, you know, which was basically, you know, retell the story in images, you know. Right. And in this process, I just gave Sabalu the idea, the story, and I basically said, like, you figure out what you have to do. And I think that's a very important thing in a lot of the times that I work with people. I like to get the maximum out of people by not telling them what to do, but letting them feel it out and figure out, you know, what's the best that they can do, you know. Right. Sabalu is now 20 years old. You know, and I've been working with her since she was 6 months in the studio. You know, like, I remember recording her playing a toy piano with a microphone and playing a Motherless Child on a jukebox, and just watching her, like, you know, sometimes I feel like a motherless child, and like just caterwauling or whatever you call it. Anyway, so I've been, you know, recording her and working together with her for forever. And one artist in particular that we were really inspired by was Molly Crabapple. She's an American artist who works very much with the Equal Justice Initiative, which is an amazing group out of Montgomery, Alabama. Anyways, they made several videos, and you can see them on YouTube and stuff. She talks about, like, the prison industrial system and, like, all sorts of things. And she does these ink drawings and paintings and the animation that involving her drawings and the storytelling of Equal Justice Initiative stories. We use that as an inspiration. And then Sabalu got really into it. And she got, basically, if you look at the way that we animated it, Sabalu's vision was that the pictures should breathe, like as if like the audience person is watching. It's like every time you take a breath in, the picture slightly is changing into the next one. So it was really a family thing, you know, and I'm really proud of her. And Joe was really proud of, you know, the whole thing, too. And
does Joe the narrator?
Joe is the narrator. And if you notice, some people don't even know what Joe looks like when they see the piece. But Joe being the animator, he's also the face of the rapist in the piece.
And you said, you said Joe was the animator, but Joe was the narrator.
The narrator, and also the character of the rapist is Joe's face. So this is also kind of a subtle nod to, like, the fact that, fortunately, most cases of rape and sexual assault, you know, it's the voice of the accused that's more important than the voice of the victim, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a very sad thing, but it happens everywhere, you know, and India especially has a huge problem with gang rape and, like, all sorts of, you know, the women are just totally not treated equally there whatsoever. So there's a lot of things that we're touching upon on this thing. But I feel like, you know, when Joe painted me and I became one of his paintings, I feel like I stopped being human, and now I'm just a Joe Coleman painting, you know. And I like living in this kind of world, because it's like Joe to me, you know, the activism that he does is like he is exposing the wound of humanity, you know, and really exposing it so you see the nitty gritty details of the wound, the everything inside the wound, you know. And I think that this process is really important in healing everyone, you know. For me, comedy, art, and music, these three things are medicine for the soul. And unfortunately, these are the three things that are under attack right now by this really crazy mentality that you have to ban, you have to cancel culture, all this, you know, all this stuff. Comedians, artists, painters, musicians should be given carte blanche. They can do anything they want. For example, you know, like when Richard Pryor was talking about himself as being a burnt match, you know, basically bringing to light this horrible experience that he had where he's like freebasing cocaine and he just like burns his whole head. Now, imagine when he makes this joke, the thousands of people that are receiving this joke, they are able to process something that is very negative and very scary, like this drug accident. And then it turns into a laugh, you know, and suddenly the trauma from this experience disappears because you have converted it into laughter. This exact chemical reaction that happens with trauma, you know, it even dates back to the Lakota Indians, right? They had this thing called the Hayoka, which was a person in the tribe who was maybe a dandy, just different from everyone else. They knew that this person did not belong in the battlefield. right? Maybe they were a little effeminate or something, you know. So this Daheyoka would stay with the women and children while the warriors went out to battle. And when the warriors came back, they would have like this severe PTSD from like the brutality of war.
Right.
And so they would have nightmares. And when they would have these nightmares, they would ask the Heyoka. They would have sessions. They would tell the Heyoka, like, oh, I just had a dream about a dog with his head on backwards taking a piss on a lake of fire, you know? And then the Heyoka would reenact what his dream was. So then the warrior would start laughing at the way the Heyoka was clowning around. And right. Suddenly the trauma of this nightmare dissipates and turns into laughter, you know? And this is something that is so necessary. I mean, look at Mitch Hedberg or George Carlin. All these people, they were really revolutionaries, and they were really important for us to just take a load off and enjoy being a human and the imperfections of humanity, like the mistakes that we make. You know, like we have to enjoy these things and not let them eat away at our souls.
Absolutely. So before we leave the topic of the retribution now,
yeah,
where can somebody see that? I know it's on YouTube. Is that the best place to see it?
Yeah, it's the best place to see it. It's Retribution now. Yeah, you can find it on YouTube.
And you did the music. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a song in there. But
there is, yes.
You supplied the music, and does Sabalu sing on one of the tracks?
Yeah, she sings a song that I wrote at the end of it called She's the Keeper of My Soul, which was dedicated to actually Buffy St. Marie and Tanya Tagak. Buffy St. Marie is just absolutely a dream person, you know. And like when I started listening to the Illuminations album that she did in 1968, it's just amazing to me how Buffy St. Marie has been such an activist even since like the 50s. I've seen the black and white those folk festivals, you know, where Bob Dylan used to play. You know, she sings
folk festival like the Newport
Cody.
Jazz Festival.
Yeah, I think it was something like that. But like, there is footage of Buffy also when she must have been like 17 or 18 years old singing a song about the addiction to codeine. You know, and this was like in the maybe late 50s, early 60s, or something like that. This is amazing.
Think, was
to
that
me
the song that I think the Charlatans from San Francisco, I think, covered that on their first album?
Cool.
You know, the record company wouldn't let him release it as a single, you know, but
I'm
pretty certain that's her, because that's kind of the twist. Like, what? She wrote that?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
hey, you know, I wanted to tell you, the last couple of days, I have seen you online a bunch popping up in places I hadn't expected. First was as part of this Boss Radio 66 launch party. Rock and Roll Broadcasting Service.
Right.
What is your tie-in with them? Do you do some sort of show there? Or?
Yeah, so basically, when I'm not juggling like Global Solidarity Forever or art stuff, I want to teach people how to do tarot. And I think that people really have a misunderstanding about how tarot works, you know, because like all art forms, you know, it gets bastardized, turns into a tool of manipulation when it's done incorrectly, you know. And I learned how to do what I believe is the correct way of doing it from the surrealist filmmaker Alejandro Jodorowsky, who actually taught me tarot like 10 years ago or something like that, or maybe a bit more, and who actually, you know, I've been in touch with a lot during the past decade, you know, sending songs, sending videos, art ideas, you know. And so Jodorowsky for me is kind of like a spiritual father, I would say, in a lot of ways. And I was lucky that in my lifetime I had, maybe because of the failures of my own father, but I always searched for spiritual father, you know. And I found that in Hannibal. I found it in Andre Williams, even. I found it in Melvin Van Peebles and Alejandro Jodorowsky. These are all four people that were very close to me and important to me, and who I really had a chance to pick their brains and share my artwork and stuff with them, you know. And I would say Hal Wilner and Lou Reed are in this situation too. I mean, with Lou, I wasn't as closely connected as like the others, but Lou and Lori, you know, I've been in touch with them on and off, and Hal also. And we got to do a lot of work together. Me and Hal, we did that Burroughs album, Let Me Hang You. Co-produced it. And so I just feel like these people, in a lot of ways, I would say they made me, you know, like they're the ones that inspired me as a kid even to explore, you know, my own mind, you know, and not be afraid of taking crazy psychedelic drugs and figuring out shit.
But now the tarot, this tarot reading tied to the, what is it, the Rock and Roll Broadcasting Service. So you do readings, or you're sort of...
Yeah, so it's really an improvised show right now. I mean, so the first episode we did was with Beatman, And that's already online on YouTube and on all sorts of links. You can find it on that on my pages. But basically, it was just like I introduced a person. You know, I want to just get people that I really love who are very versatile, have like their fingers in all sorts of different pies. And mm-hmm. Beatman is someone I've known for more than half of my life. He put out my first album with the Shrines.
Let's explain him a little bit, because I mean, I think in the U.S., I don't think he's as well known, but we're talking about the Reverend Beatman.
Reverend Beatman, yes, right.
And he's from Switzerland. I mean, he has played in bands before, like the Monsters and so forth.
The Monsters, yeah.
But usually he's like a one-man band.
Right. And he does this very haunting kind of like gospel meets Hazel Atkins meets like incest. Like, he also likes to do this kind of depraved, frightening throat singing now also is included in his performance. But basically, yeah, he channels some kind of evil preacher. And it's very convincing, because that's the thing about Beatman, is that he is the real deal in a lot of ways. And like, it's not just a performance, but like there's a truth to it. And that's why, you know, it's so rockin' and so fierce. And so, yeah, I interviewed him. I did his tarot cards on the show.
So after I saw you appear on that, where the RRBS thing, several days later on YouTube, there were some clip of you and the Beatman, and there was a third person, a woman. I don't recall.
Yes, Jenny. Jenny Messer from LA.
Messer from LA, and you said something pretty funny about. I guess you were talking to Paris Hilton, or you were saying that you had met Paris Hilton one time, and you put your arm on her backside, like I guess for a photo or whatever, and you said it felt like an expensive leather purse or bag. But that was an episode of tarot
that was
card
the first episode. Yeah, that's the first episode. I think that the next episode I'm really just going to be talking about I have two options. I think I might want to get Mike Hurd, you know, who just wrote that book Mind Over Matter about Fortune Records. You know, actually last night I talked to Mike for like 6 hours straight. I wish I had recorded it, because it's pretty amazing. You know, when he was telling me about all the research that he was doing in Fortune, you know, and like, he's just absolutely been one of the best people I've ever met too. You know, like, I met Mike at the Spellcaster Lounge in New Orleans. I was 18 or 19 years old on tour with the Spaceships, and Ernie Cato had played in the basement. At that time, Mike was going out with Peg from the Gories. And I remember sitting with Peg with Larry Turbush, who was sadly he's passed away, but he was in the Dirties. And me and Larry were just like trying to pressure Peg into doing a Gories reunion. You know, and it's like these beautiful moments that I remember. I mean, that's one more thing, too. It's like now that the COVID thing happened and everything's on pause, my brain has been able to kind of heal. And I'm finding little morsels of memories also all over scattered around that just make me really happy that I chose this path of rock and roll, you know. And it's hard for me to see, you know, my younger daughter, Bella. She has a band called Bella and the Bazaar, who are incredibly good, you know, and now she started this band just, you know, past couple of years, but like now basically, you know, they can't really play shows anywhere, and they're it's not stopping them, you know, they're jamming, they're making songs, they're like, you know, honing in the craft.
You mentioned Sabalu being about 20. How old is Bella?
Bella's 17, and she'll be like 18 in November 27. Yeah.
Earlier this year, though, you were playing some shows. A friend of mine here in Los Angeles, Mona Santana, is a go-go dancer, and she used to tour the Lords of Altamont. Yes. Before the pandemic hit, she was doing shows with Jim Jones of the Righteous Mind, and she's danced with the Woggles in the past. But she was telling me that she danced several shows with the King Kong and the Barbecue Show back in January, I think, at the Pacific
Northwest. Yes, exactly. We had her and Sarah Savannah, also a wonderful go-go dancer from France, who lives in Seattle now.
Were those the last shows you guys did? Barbecue shows?
Yeah, basically in the States, that was it.
We know what's going on with all these your charitable work and your activist work and your artwork. What's the status on some of your better known music project? I mean, you got
so,
a lot of, yeah. What's up with the Shrine?
Well, the Shrines is also on hold. I mean, I just put out a jazz album, and I recorded this jazz album with Marshall Allen from the Sun Orchestra and Noel Scott from the and dudes from Calexico, John Cremantino and Martin Venk. That was something that I started, basically, I guess I would say that it was type of healing music, you know, like I said, my wife went through, our family went through a cancer scare, you know, with my wife and stuff. I felt like when I was doing this music, you know, and she was sitting in her chair in the living room while I was making this jazz music, I feel like it was a very big healing process for all of us, you know, and, this is the most serious piece of music I've ever made, you know, in terms of like, I love to mix humor into everything that I do. But this jazz record, I would say, is just straight up hardcore, kind of like spiritual jazz, you know, and sadly, there's three requiems on it. You know, there's a requiem for Danny Ray Thompson from the orchestra, who I was really buddies with, you know, for the past 15 years. Another brother from the orchestra, Yahya El Majid, who passed just a few months ago of cancer. And Hal Wilner, you know, the producer, and he was really very close to my heart. And I mean, Hal was like the music supervisor for Saturday Night Live since like 1980. So if you imagine like any skit that you loved from Saturday Night Live, and I remember as a kid, you know, I even loved Toon Sis the Driving Cat, you know, like, and I mean, you know, it was Hal was the one who did all the music for that kind of stuff. And he produced Burroughs, he produced Lou Reed and Laurie Anderson. And this recently, there's a T-Rex compilation that just came out, of which I contributed one track. And, yeah, it's just, Hal was the kind of guy, you know, I remember when we did the T-Rex song, we did I Love to Boogie. And when I got to the studio, it was in New York, and like, he had all these amazing players, you know, Moist Paulo was there too, who plays with a lot of great bands. And the first thing I told him, I was like, hey, Hal, I want this song to be like 180 BPM. You know, I just want it to be really fucking fast. Like, yeah. I compared it to like Jerry Lee Lewis in the Star Club, you know, or like the old, you know, the old footage from the 60s of people. So I asked him to do that. And then, you know, I'm like telling the drummer like faster, faster, you know, and then get the horns are kicking in, you know. And another thing was funny was that Mark Rebo was playing guitar, who's like a really famous guitar player. He played with like Tom Waits and all sorts of like really amazing people, and Lou Reed of course too. And Mark Rebo was there, and I was like, hey Mark, I would really love if you listen to this song. And I played him Bo Dudley as a Shotgun Rider, you know, that great track. The slide guitar in that track is one of the most entertaining slide guitars I've ever heard. So I showed him that track, and I was like, dude, you got to do this with the slide guitar. And it was amazing. Like, everything that I was telling these guys, they were super enthusiastic. And, you know, there's no ego. When you're in a great recording session like that, it's nothing about ego. It's all about harmony and, like, and, yeah, you got this idea. Let's try this thing. Oh, you got this, you know. So I in general, like to work this way with everything, you know, with film and with music, is that you got to put the ego aside, and you just got to listen to everyone and understand that, you know, the group effort, like, you know, we're much stronger when we're bound together, you know.
Tell me again the name of the jazz album that you're...
It's called the Infinite Ones. Yeah, the Infinite Ones. You can find it on my Bandcamp. Yeah, I'm really happy about it. And having, you know, Marshall Allen and Noel be involved was really like a heavy thing for me, especially because we're honoring the voyage of Danny Ray Thompson, who is like longtime member of Sun Ra Orchestra, I think since the like 60s actually. You know, Marshall has been there the longest, but Danny I think would have been the second longest in the legacy members, you know, the people who actually were under the tutelage of Sun Ra actually. I will tell you that when I moved to Germany, I was 22, and I discovered I met this painter who was American, and he was moving back to America while I was moving here.
Right.
And he gave me like a stack of like videotapes and CDRs of like spoken word speeches by Sun Ra talking in universities and stuff, and also his film Space of the Place and the documentary A Joyful Noise. And I will tell you that shit changed my life. Like when I was so heavily inspired by that stuff. I was watching these videos over and over. And in fact, the reason I think I fell so madly in love with my wife was we would just hang out and watch 7 or 8 hours of Sun Ra in a row. And she would just be like, let's watch some more, you know? And like, I was like, okay, this is the woman I want to spend eternity with. You know,
I hear you. Ask you something else here. So, the jazz records come out. I think the last time we spoke, you had been working with the produced or recorded some Jackets tunes. Are you producing artists right now? Working with any other people produce as a producer?
As a producer, what have I? I'm doing another project with Joe Coleman with this, like, a spoken word thing that he.
Oh, okay.
Other than that, actually, no, I haven't been doing anything in particular. Oh, you know, I did. I started a punk band called the King Khan Unlimited, and we just signed to a label. It's got the Magnetics in it. You know, the band from Bordeaux, France, a really amazing duo playing really heavy garage punk stuff. And Fredovich, my organ player from the Shrines, is playing bass in this band.
Okay.
And it's a mix of, like, Ramones, Dead Boy. It's very Cleveland inspired punk. You know, and like Electric Eels, that era of, like, Rocket from the Tombs, you know, Simply Saucer. I would call it really good, raunchy punk rock. Is coming
now
out.
That's like something we would you. So you just got signed. I mean, that's you still have to record songs, obviously.
No. We have an album and a single coming out in January. Late January, I think, next year. Bargain Bin Records.
Okay. We're going to have to wrap things up here in a moment. About your collaboration with your daughter, Sabalu. Thinking about Sabalu, the song I'd like us to go out on is an older track from King Khan and the Shrines off of Three Hairs in Your Mind. It's a song, Sabalu. So that's the song, your daughter, that's one and the same.
That was actually recorded on the day of after her birth, actually. The first practice that we had after she had been born.
That is very cool. Here, I wrote a song. My daughter inspired a song, but at that point, she was a teenager, and it's called Eye Roll. So,
different. I totally know about
so
that.
So, let me ask you this. So, times. In the character of the song, sort of the take charge gal there, does that sort of has your. The way you describe Sabalu in the song, does your daughter have any of these kind of characteristics or personality?
Yeah, completely. She makes a fool out of me every day.
You know, well, thanks for being a good father, I must say.
Man, I'm happy. It's the greatest job that I ever got handed. You know, and I don't regret anything. Both my kids, you know, they're mature, they're smart, they're goofy, they love rock and roll. They could even understand the humor of Gigi Allen. It takes a lot of experience to, like, be able to have a dad like me. And you know, like, music is such an integral part of our family. And my advice to any parents out there, you know, don't let your children wander off into their own direction with music. You know, share your music with them, share your passions with them, because that ultimately will keep your family together forever, you know, and we just sit around together. We listen to records, you know, they show me gospel songs that I'd never heard of. You know, they're actually on their own search for finding, you know, the unique sounds and everything like that.
King, thank you again for joining me on our Coolest Conversations podcast.
This was a cool conversation, I must say.
Well, let's give a listen now to Sabalu off Three Hairs in Your Mind. It's King Khan and the Shrines, Little Steven's Underground Garage. That was King Khan and the Shrines with Sabalu, off the band's 2001 album, Three Hairs and Your Mind, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to His Majesty, King Khan, for speaking with me on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Olivia Callahan for producing our podcast, both parts 1 and 2. And join us again next week for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As a child, Otha Ellis Bates McDaniel taught himself to play guitar, but he never found one he liked, so he built his own. Soon after, his rectangular-shaped axe with an old TV dial for a volume knob could be heard on radios everywhere as he launched the beat heard round the world. He was Bo Diddley. His handmade guitar is at the Hard Rock Cafe in Times Square. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history are at Hard Rock Cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com. Don't let it slide, baby, diamond ring.